Drawing room over here.
You made it. Oh, come on through. Do you fancy drink? What's your tipple?
Born in the Soviet Union with Jewish and Russian heritage, his move to the UK as a child and education at Edinburgh University very much informed his Sunday Times best-selling book entitled Immigrant's Love Letter to the West, the tagline of which is, quote, "If an immigrant can't publicly profess their appreciation for this country, who can?" Konstantin Kissin is a satirist, author and commentator who is in Australia for the first time speaking about censorship, the culture wars and Western democratic values. Welcome to RN Drive, Konstantin.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know, satirists want it both ways, to sort of mean and not mean what they say at the same time, and I sort of get that. But who exactly told you that you can't appreciate the freedoms of the West? I mean, aren't you doing so right now?
I am doing so right now, but I feel that increasingly that is a difficult position to take, particularly if you're a native-born person. Certainly in the UK, it's this idea that we should be delighted to be in the West and proud of our history and of our societies, something that many people find quite difficult to express, because it's associated with a kind of unpleasant nationalism, or patriotism more generally seen as a kind of dirty word in some circles, at least, particularly in the media and in the political class. So I think it's something that is very important for us to appreciate. And we've been talking, obviously, as societies for some years now about things like privilege and, discrimination, all these things, which are good conversations to be having. But it just seems to me that one thing we are forgetting to talk about is what I call first world privilege, which we all enjoy enjoy, frankly, at a level that most of us don't even appreciate.
The West, and I suppose I'm speaking about Presidents Joe Biden and Volodymyr Zelensky here, very keen to paint Vladimir Putin and what he represents as the biggest single threat to Western democratic values. You speak a lot about the West's so-called self-inflicted wounds. What are they, and which is the bigger threat, Putin or ourselves?
I think we ourselves are a much, much bigger threat because I don't believe that Vladimir Putin would have invaded Ukraine, nor, frankly, I think the Iran-backed terrorists and in Hamas would have attacked Israel in the way that they did if the West wasn't so distracted, divided, and if we didn't keep signaling weakness to our enemies. And I think one of the reasons that's happening is we have become very solipsistic, and we spend more time looking at our history and at ourselves with a hypercritical lens and talking down ourselves instead of attempting to look into the future with positivity and optimism. So I think we are increasingly spending too much time and too much effort on trying to reevaluate the past and undo. We're not even trying to undo, frankly, the past. We're just spending quite a lot of time trying to make ourselves feel guilty about things that our ancestors did and things of that nature. So this this cultural rot is the thing that I think is causing us to attract the kinds of things that we're seeing in recent years, where the West's dominance around the world is increasingly being challenged. So if Vladimir Putin obviously has his own agenda for Russia, and China has its own agenda for China, and this is very normal. There is a battle of civilizations going on. There always has been. My concern is less about that, because the West is by far and away the most dominant force in the world. And if it is willing to remain that, we will not have any trouble seeing off any competition. However, that is something that I feel increasingly is not the case.
Speaking about Ukraine, you wrote in November last year that it's time to end the war in Ukraine, despite you having family there. I believe you met your wife there. How was that sentiment met by the Ukrainians that you know?
Well, just to contextualize that a little bit, when the conflict first broke out, when Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine in February 2022, I was very clear that the West I certainly felt that it's very important that we support the Ukrainians with everything we've got. With my own YouTube channel, we raised £55,000 for the Ukrainian humanitarian effort in about an hour. I was on every media outlet that I could get my hands on to talk about the need to support the Ukrainians and help them defend their country. So I wouldn't wish your audience to come away from this thinking that I'm some kind of Putin appeaser or apologist. Quite on the contrary, I think it was very important that we supported the Ukrainians. My point in the article that I wrote was that we have got to a point now where there is a lack of political will in the West to provide the level of support that the Ukrainians need to make any further advances in the war. They had a very significant battlefield successes in the early part of the war. But at the time I wrote that article, there had been none of those for at least a year. And what we are seeing now is that given the manpower and artillery, particularly differentials between Russia and Ukraine, the Ukrainians are struggling. So either we give them the support they need to actually make progress in the opposite direction, which it seems to me we're not going to do, or we have to be brutally honest with ourselves and with them and say, look, this is not a war that you're going to do any better in. And right now, all you're doing is throwing your men into the meat grinder for no territorial gain. Let's get you the best possible deal. And I've been clear from day one, by the way, that in the end, this was always going to be a conflict that ended with some kind of settlement. And my main concern for the Ukrainians is not that they get the most amount of land. My main concern is making sure that this can never happen again. And that means some kind of long-term security arrangements, not a piece of paper with some words on it, but an actual some kind of situation where this situation cannot be repeated because, as you know, this is now the second time that Ukraine's been invaded in under 10 years. So what I hope happens as a result of this is that the bloodshed can end, and we get to a position where Ukraine is able to pursue its future as a free, Western-leaning, democratic society and free from the threat of a further invasion. That's the most important thing here, not land.
Just thinking about your comment about the kind of competition of civilizations and the West's dominance, I think you said, I'm not sure if this is the same way that you see yourself, but I think a lot of Australians would see themselves as a hybrid of East and West on an individual level, that is, notwithstanding our head of state is an English bloke, our public holidays are born of Christendom, and our government is very much lumped in with the West in the form of AUKUS. But with those ears in mind, I just wonder if your commentary sort of appeals to those who want to denigrate the other, the lesser sort of wealthy Brexiteers who are tired of apologising and want to somehow say quiet things out loud. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that would be a misrepresentation of my views. I think there is a perfectly natural thing for any society to do, which is evaluate its own attitudes and behaviours in a critical way. And I think that's important for growth and getting better at things. And I'm someone who came to the UK in 1995. I experienced racism and discrimination at points in my life. So I'm certainly not someone who pretends that our societies are perfect. What I am very clear about is making sure that we put our self-criticism into a context. And if you ask yourself a simple question in the context of Australia, how many Australians get on rickety boats with their children every year and brave shark-infested waters to seek a better life elsewhere? And how many people do the opposite? How many people wish to come to our societies? How many people in their millions now cross the southern border of the United States, risking their lives dealing with Mexican drug cartels in order to get to the United States? Tens of thousands of people get on small boats and cross the English Channel to get to the UK, and many thousands cross the Mediterranean for the same reason. We have created societies that are very, very good at creating the things that human beings seem to care about. And when I say that our societies are better, I don't mean that we have a higher moral value. I just mean that we are better at producing the things that attract people to come.
Yeah, I think about that. And I always remember how documentarian Ken Burns, who, as you know, was a fanatical student of the West, or at least the US in the 20th century, once said, never trust anyone who says they, there is only we. And I just wonder if some of what you say comes off sounding like it's punching down on poorer countries, a kind of Western superiority. And I just wonder if that undermines your point about the proud tolerance of the West and how the West came together under universal beliefs.
to observe that people wish to leave countries in other parts of the world, as I did, and come to the West is not punching down on those countries. It is an acknowledgement of reality. The Western model has created levels of prosperity and freedom that are unparalleled anywhere else. And to acknowledge that is not punching down on anyone. It's simple
fact.
Is it
our obligation to share those things?
No, it's not our obligation to share those things, but we also ought to acknowledge that our countries are extraordinarily generous in terms of welcoming people from the rest of the world who want to come here and make a success of their lives here. So and by the way, the West is generous in terms of foreign aid and providing support to other countries. So I think this angle of conversation is unhelpful because we are not obligated to pretend that our societies are worse than they are in order that other people don't feel inferior. What we ought to be doing is supporting other people around the world to make the same progress as we have done. And the way we've made that progress is by instituting several major core principles of Western society that have produced the levels of prosperity and safety we enjoy, and that is government by consent, freedom of expression, and the capitalist model of private property and the rule of law. These are the things that are the bedrock of our success, and other societies are welcome to those ideas, and they're welcome to implement them and to grow in the way that we have done.
With me on RN Drive, Konstantin Kissin. He's the Russian-British satirist, author and commentator. He's currently touring Australia. You've described yourself, and I'm not sure if it was joking or not, that you're, quote, politically non-binary, and you say you are, quote, I'm definitely not conservative, and that you hate teams. You don't want to be on a red team or a blue team. You're not interested in being tribal. I'm just curious what traditionally left-wing ideas you hold to be true.
Yes, it's a question that people are often asking me. So, first of almost all the ideas I now speak about were considered consensus beliefs only 10 years ago. So in my book, An Immigrant's Love Letter to the West, I talk about immigration, for example, from my perspective as an immigrant. When I was growing up, and when I was a young man even, the idea that countries need to enforce the border was universally accepted. So Barack Obama talked about it, Hillary Clinton talked about it, Bill Clinton talked about it, politicians in the UK talked about it. And I'm someone who's a supporter of immigration. I think immigration is massively beneficial when it is properly managed. I'm just not a fan of open borders. And apparently that now is considered to make me right wing. I believe that free speech is the bedrock of Western civilization, on which our scientific and technological progress is based. In my younger years, this was not considered a party political or a partisan point. But to your question about which ideas of the left I think are important, I certainly think that our concerns about inequality in society are true and valid. I think that societies that have high levels of inequality are bad for everyone, including the rich in those countries.
On that, I was struck by something that you said, and I quote, "You'll never get young people to conserve a society that's not working for them. We won't overcome woke nihilism as long as young people are locked out of the housing market, unable to pair up, unable to have kids, unable to prepare for the future." You've also said, and I quote, "Why would young people support democracy if I can't vote my way out of things that are not working? Why would I support the system?" So what concrete solutions or policy settings are you actually suggesting here? Do you support government housing, tax regulations which restrict property investors tying up the housing market? What about inheritance tax? What concrete ideas do you have?
Look, you've got to build more houses. It's really not that complicated. And like in the UK, my understanding is there's a kind of collusion and corruption in the construction industry and with planning regulations that we have in the UK. All of this needs to be broken apart. We have got to get a grip of this problem. Young people are completely locked out of the opportunity to save, to build a family, to do the things that human beings have wanted to do from the creation of humanity. So this is a major, major problem for our societies. And this is why, you know, people who want to paint me in a negative light keep pretending that I'm conservative when I spend so much of my time talking to conservatives about the fact that if you want people to have any idea of conserving anything, you have got to give young people a shot. And that means the sort of silver vote that doesn't want housing to be built. You've got to ignore that, and you've got to build more houses. You know, a lot of people will say, well, yeah, if we didn't have such high levels of immigration, we wouldn't need so much housing. And there's some truth to that. But I also think that at the end of the day, if we are having the levels of immigration that we have got to build the houses, not only for the people who are coming, but also for the people who are already here who don't have enough housing. So, you know, the practical solution here is you have got to do whatever it takes to build more houses for people, to drive down the price of housing to reasonable levels. The wage to price ratio when it comes to housing has just skyrocketed in recent decades, and it is a major problem in every Western society, which explains why, to some extent, our birth rates are where they are, and all sorts of other malaise that we are currently experiencing can be tied to that. So this is a problem that left and right have to unite on and tackle.
Konstantin Kissin, the Russian-British satirist, author, and commentator currently touring Australia. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park.